Chapter 8. At 8 o'clock in the morning, Freiherr Hugo Reiss, the Reichs consul in San Francisco, stepped from his Mercedes-Benz 220E and walked briskly up the steps of the consulate. Behind him came two young male employees of the Foreign Office. The door had been unlocked by Reiss's staff, and he passed inside, raising his hand in greeting to the two switchboard girls, the vice consul, Herr Frank, and then in the inner office, Reiss's secretary, Herr Fütterhoff. "Freiherr," Fütterhoff said. "There is a coded radiogram coming in just now from Berlin. Preface 1. That meant removing his overcoat and giving it to Fütterhoff to hang up. 10 minutes ago, Herr Kreitz von Mir called. He would like you to return his call.
Thank you, Reiss said.
He seated himself at the small table by the window of his office, removed the cover from his breakfast, saw on the plate the roll, scrambled eggs, and sausage, poured himself hot black coffee from the silver pot, then unrolled his morning newspaper. The caller, Kreutz von Mir, was the chief of the Sicherheitsdienst in the PSA area. His headquarters were located, under a cover name, at the air terminal. Relations between Reiss and Kreutz von Mir were rather strained. Their jurisdiction overlapped in countless matters, a deliberate policy, no doubt, of the higher-ups in Berlin. Reiss held an honorary commission in the SS, the rank of major, and this made him technically Kreutz von Mir's subordinate. The commission had been bestowed several years ago, and at that time Reiss had discerned the purpose. But he could do nothing about it. Nonetheless, he chafed still. The newspaper, flown in by Lufthansa and arriving at 6 in the morning, was the Frankfurter Zeitung. Reiss read the front page carefully. Von Schirach under house arrest, possibly dead by now. Too bad. Göring residing at a Luftwaffe training base, surrounded by experienced veterans of the war, all loyal to the Fat One. No one would slip up on him. No SD Hatchetman. And what about Dr. Goebbels? Probably in the heart of Berlin, depending as always on his own wit, his ability to talk his way out of anything. If Heydrich sends a squad to do him in, Reiss reflected, the little doctor will not only argue them out of it, he will probably persuade them to switch over, make them employees of the Ministry for Propaganda and Public Enlightenment. He could imagine Dr. Goebbels at this moment, in the apartment of some stunning movie actress, disdaining the Wehrmacht units bumping through the streets below. Nothing frightened that colonel. Goebbels would smile his mocking smile, continue stroking the lovely lady's bosom with his left hand, while writing his article for the day's Angriff with... Reiss's thoughts were interrupted by his secretary's knock. "I'm sorry, Kreutz von Mir is on the line again." Rising, Reiss went to his desk and took the receiver. "Reiss here." The heavy Bavarian accents of the local SD chief.
"Any word on the advert character?"
Puzzled, Reiss tried to make out what Kreutz von Mir was referring to. He murmured. "To my knowledge, there are 3 or 4 advert characters on the Pacific coast at the moment."
"The one traveling in by Lufthansa was in the last week."
"Oh," Reiss said. Holding the receiver between his ear and shoulder, he took out his cigarette case.
"He never came in here."
"What's he doing?"
"God, I don't know. Ask Canaris."
"I'd like you to call the Foreign Office and have them call the Chancery and have whoever's on hand get hold of the Admiralty and demand that the Abwehr either take its people back out of here or give us an account of why they're here."
"Can't you do that?"
"Everything's in confusion."
"They've completely lost the Abwehr man," Reiss decided. "They, the local SD, were told by someone on Heydrich's staff to watch him, and they missed a connection. And now they want me to bail them out."
"If he comes in here," Reiss said, "I'll have somebody stay on him. You can rely on that."
Of course, there was little or no chance that the man would come in, and they both knew that.
"He undoubtedly uses a cover name," Kreutz von Mir plotted on. "We don't know it, naturally. He's an aristocratic-looking fellow, about 40, a captain. Actual name, Rudolf Wegener. One of those old monarchist families from East Prussia. Probably supported Van Papen in the Systemzeit."
Reiss made himself comfortable at his desk as Kreutz von Mir droned away.
"The only answer, as I see it, to these monarchist hangers-on is to cut the budget of the Navy so they can't afford..."
Finally, Reiss managed to get off the phone. When he returned to his breakfast, he found the roll cold. The coffee, however, was still hot. He drank it and resumed reading the newspaper. "No end to it," he thought. "Those SD people keep a shift on duty all night. Call you at 3 in the morning."
His secretary, Federhoff, stuck his head into the office, saw that he was off the phone, and said,
"Sacramento called just now in great agitation. They claim there's a Jew running around the streets of San Francisco."
Both he and Rice laughed.
"All right," Rice said. "Tell them to calm down and send us the regular papers. Anything else?" "You read the messages of condolence?"
"Are there more?"
"A few. I'll keep them on my desk if you want them. I've already sent out answers."
"I have to address that meeting today," Rice said. "At one this afternoon. Those businessmen."
"I won't let you forget," Federhoff said.
Rice leaned back in his chair.
"Care to make a bet?"
"Not on the apartheid deliberations, if that's what you mean."
"It'll be the hangman."
Lingering, Federhoff said,
"Heydrich has gone as far as he can. Those people never pass over to direct apartheid control because everyone is scared of them. The apartheid bigwigs would have a fit even at the idea. You'd get a coalition in 25 minutes, as soon as the first SS car took off from Prinzelbrechtstrasse. They'd have all those economic big shots like Krupp and Tyson."
He broke off. One of the cryptographers had come up to him with an envelope. Rice held out his hand. His secretary brought the envelope to him. It was the urgent coded radiogram, decoded and typed out. When he finished reading it, he saw that Federhoff was waiting to hear. Rice crumpled up the message in the big ceramic ashtray on his desk, lit it with his lighter.
"There's a Japanese general supposed to be traveling here incognito. Tadeki. You'd better go down to the public library and get one of those official Japanese military magazines that would have his picture. Do it discreetly, of course. I don't think we'd have anything on him here."
He started toward the locked filing cabinet, then changed his mind.
"Get what information you can. The statistics. They should all be available at the library."
He added, "This General Tadeki was a chief of staff a few years ago. Do you recall anything about him?"
"Just a little," Federhoff said. "Quite a fire-eater. He should be about 80 now. Seems to me he advocated some sort of crash program to get Japan into space."
"On that he failed," Rice said.
"I wouldn't be surprised if he's coming here for medical purposes," Federhoff said. "There's been a number of old Japanese military men here to use the big UC hospital. That way they can make use of German surgical techniques they can't get at home. Naturally, they keep it quiet. Patriotic reasons, you know. So perhaps we should have somebody at the UC hospital watching, if Berlin wants to keep their eye on him."
Rice nodded. Or the old general might be involved in commercial speculations, a good deal of which went on in San Francisco. Connections he had made while in service would be of use to him now that he was retired. Or was he retired? The message called him General, not Retired General.
"As soon as you have the picture," Rice said, "pass copies right on to our people at the airport and down at the harbor. He may have already come in. You know how long it takes them to get this sort of thing to us."
And of course, if the general had already reached San Francisco, Berlin would be angry at the PSA consulate. The consulate should have been able to intercept him before the order from Berlin had even been sent. Federhoff said,
"I'll stamp date the coded radiogram from Berlin, so if any question comes up later on, we can show exactly when we received it, right to the hour."
"Thank you," Rice said.
The people in Berlin were past masters at transferring responsibility, and he was weary of being stuck. It had happened too many times.
"Just to be on the safe side," he said, "I think I'd better have you answer that message. Say, your instructions abysmally tardy. Person already reported in area. Possibility of successful intercept remote at this stage. Put something along those lines into shape and send it. Keep it good and vague. You understand?"
Federhoff nodded.
"I'll send it right off, and keep a record of the exact date and moment it was sent."
He shut the door after him. "You have to watch out," Rice reflected, "or all at once you find yourself consul to a bunch of niggers on an island off the coast of South Africa. And the next you know, you have a black mammy for a mistress, and 10 or 11 little pickaninnies calling you daddy." Reseating himself at his breakfast table, he lit an Egyptian Simon Arzt cigarette number 70, carefully reclosing the metal tin. It did not appear that he would be interrupted for a little while now, so from his briefcase he took the book he had been reading, opened to his place mark, made himself comfortable, and resumed where he had last been forced to stop. Had he actually walked streets of quiet cars,
Sunday morning peace of the Tiergarten, so far away. Another life. Ice cream, a taste that could never have existed. Now they boiled nettles and were glad to get them. God, he cried out, won't they stop? The huge British tanks came on. Another building, it might have been an apartment house or a store, a school or office, he could not tell. The ruins toppled, slid into fragments. Below in the rubble, another handful of survivors buried, without even the sound of death. Death had spread out everywhere equally, over the living, the hurt, the corpses layer after layer that already had begun to smell. The stinking, quivering corpse of Berlin, the eyeless turrets still upraised, disappearing without protest like this one, this nameless edifice that man had once put up with pride. His arms, the boy noticed, were covered with the film of gray, the ash, partly inorganic, partly the burned, sifting final produce of life. All mixed now, the boy knew, and wiped it from him. He did not think much further. He had another thought that captured his mind, if there was thinking to be done, over the screams and the hump-hump of the shells. Hunger. For 6 days he had eaten nothing but the nettles, and now they were gone. The pasture of weeds had disappeared into a single vast crater of earth. Other dim, gaunt figures had appeared at the rim, like the boy, had stood silent and then drifted away. An old mother with a babushka tied about her gray head, basket, empty, under her arm. A one-armed man, his eyes empty as the basket. A girl, faded now, back into the litter of slashed trees in which the boy Eric hid. And still the snake came on. Would it ever end? The boy asked, addressing no one. And if it did, what then? Would they fill their bellies, these...
Freiherr, Federhoff's voice came. Sorry to interrupt you. Just one word.
Rice jumped, shut his book.
Certainly.
How that man can write, he thought. Completely carried me away. Real. Fall of Berlin to the British. As vivid as if it had actually taken place.
Ugh, he shivered.
Amazing, the power of fiction, even cheap popular fiction, to evoke. No wonder it's banned within Reich territory. I'd ban it myself. Sorry I started it. But too late. Must finish now. His secretary said,
Some seamen from a German ship. They're required to report to you.
Yes, Rice said. He hopped to the door and out to the front office. There the three seamen, wearing heavy gray sweaters, all with thick blonde hair, strong faces, a trifle nervous. Rice raised his right hand.
Heil Hitler!
He gave them a brief friendly smile.
Heil Hitler!
They mumbled. They began showing him their papers. As soon as he had certified their visit to the consulate, he hurried back into his private office. Once more alone, he reopened The Grasshopper Lies Heavy. His eyes fell on a scene involving Hitler. Now he found himself unable to stop. He began to read the scene out of sequence, the back of his neck burning. The trial, he realized, of Hitler. After the close of the war. Hitler in the hands of the Allies. Good God. Also Goebbels, Goring, all the rest of them. At Munich. Evidently Hitler was answering the American prosecutor. Black, flaming, the spirit of old seemed for an instant once again to blaze up. The quivering, shambling body jerked taut, the head lifted. Out of the lips that ceaselessly drooled, a croaking half-bark, half-whisper.
Deutscher, hier ist Eric.
Shudders among those who watched and listened. The earphones pressed tightly, strained faces of Russian, American, British, and German alike. Yes, Carl thought. Here he stands once more. They have beaten us, and more. They have stripped this Superman, shown him for what he is. Only,
Freiherr?
Rice realized that his secretary had entered the office.
I'm busy,
he said angrily. He slammed the book shut.
I'm trying to read this book, for God's sake!
It was hopeless. He knew it.
Another coded radiogram is coming in from Berlin, Fitterhoff said. I caught a glimpse of it as they started decoding it. It deals with the political situation.
What did it say? Rice murmured, rubbing his forehead with his thumb and fingers.
Dr. Goebbels has gone on the radio unexpectedly. A major speech.
The secretary was quite excited.
We're supposed to take the text, they're transmitting it out of code, and make sure it's printed by the press here.
Yes, yes, Rice said. The moment his secretary had left once more,
Rice reopened the book. One more peek, despite my resolution. He thumbed the previous portion. In silence, Carl contemplated the flag-draped casket. Here he lay, and now he was gone, really gone. Not even the demon-inspired powers could bring him back. The man, or was it after all, Übermensch, whom Carl had blindly followed, worshipped, even to the brink of the grave. Adolf Hitler had passed beyond, but Carl clung to life. "I will not follow him," Carl's mind whispered. "I will go on, alive, and rebuild. And we will all rebuild. We must." How far, how terribly far the leader's magic had carried him. And what was it, now that the last dot had been put on that incredible record, that journey from the isolated rustic town in Austria, up from rotting poverty in Vienna, from the nightmare ordeal of the trenches, through political intrigue, the founding of the party, to the chancellorship, to what, for an instant, had seemed near world domination? Carl knew. Bluff. Adolf Hitler had lied to them. He had led them with empty words. "It is not too late. We see your bluff, Adolf Hitler, and we know you for what you are at last. And the Nazi Party, the dreadful era of murder and megalomaniacal fantasy, for what it is, what it was." Turning, Carl walked away from the silent casket. Rice shut the book and sat for a time. In spite of himself, he was upset. More pressure should have been put on the Japs, he said to himself, to suppress this damn book. In fact, it's obviously deliberate on their part. They could have arrested this, whatever his name is, Avinson. They have plenty of power in the Middle West. What upset him was this. The death of Adolf Hitler, the defeat and destruction of Hitler, the Partei and Germany itself as depicted in Avinson's book— It was all, somehow, grander, more in the old spirit than the actual world, the world of German hegemony. "How could that be?" Rice asked himself. "Is it just this man's writing ability?" They know a million tricks, those novelists. Take Dr. Goebbels. That's how he started out, writing fiction. Appeals to the base lusts that hide in everyone, no matter how respectable on the surface. Yes, the novelist knows humanity. How worthless they are, ruled by their testicles, swayed by cowardice, selling out every cause because of their greed. All he's got to do is thump on the drum, and there is his response. And he laughing, of course, behind his hand at the effect he gets. "Look how he played on my sentiments," Herr Rice reflected, "not on my intellect. And naturally he's going to get paid for it. The money's there. Obviously somebody put the Hunsfoth up to it, instructed him what to write. They'll write anything if they know they'll get paid. Tell any bunch of lies, and then the public actually takes the smelly brew seriously when it's dished out. Where was this published?" Herr Rice inspected the copy of the book. Omaha, Nebraska, last outpost of the former plutocratic U.S. publishing industry, once located in downtown New York and supported by Jewish and communist gold. Maybe this Abinson is a Jew. "They're still at it, trying to poison us. This Jüdisch Buch." He slammed the covers of the Grasshopper violently together. "Actual name, probably Abenstein. No doubt the SD has looked into it by now. Beyond doubt, we ought to send somebody across into the RMS to pay Herr Abenstein a visit. I wonder if Kreutz von Mir has gotten instructions to that effect. Probably hasn't, with all the confusion in Berlin. Everybody too busy with domestic matters. But this book," Rice thought, "is dangerous. If Abenstein should be found dangling from the ceiling some fine morning, it would be a sobering notice to anyone who might be influenced by this book. We would have had the last word, written the postscript. It would take a white man, of course. I wonder what Skorzeny is doing these days." Rice pondered, reread the dust jacket of the book. The kike keeps himself barricaded, up in this high castle. Nobody's fool. Whoever gets in and gets him won't get back out. Maybe it's foolish. The book, after all, is in print. Too late now. And that's Japanese-dominated territory. The little yellow men would raise a terrific fuss. Nevertheless, if it was done adroitly, if it could be properly handled... Freiherr Hugo Rice made a notation on his pad. Broach subject with SS General Otto Skorzeny, or better yet, Otto Ohlendorf, at Amt 3 of the Reichssicherheitshauptamt,
Didn't Ollendorf head Einsatzgruppe D?
And then, all at once, without warning of any kind, he felt sick with rage. I thought this was over, he said to himself. Does it have to go on forever? The war ended years ago, and we thought it was finished then. But that Africa fiasco, that crazy Seyss-Inquart carrying out Rosenberg's schemes. That Herr Hope is right, he thought, with his joke about our contact on Mars. Mars populated by Jews. We would see them there, too, even with their two heads apiece, standing 1 foot high. I have my routine duties, he decided. I don't have time for any of these harebrained adventures, this sending of Einsatz commandos after Abinson. My hands are full greeting German sailors and answering coded radiograms. Let someone higher up initiate a project of that sort. It's their business. Anyhow, he decided, if I instigated it and it backfired, one can imagine where I'd be. In protective custody in Eastern General Gouvernement, if not in a chamber being squirted with Zyklon B hydrogen cyanide gas. Reaching out, he carefully scratched the notation on his pad out of existence, then burned the paper itself in the ceramic ashtray. There was a knock, and his office door opened. His secretary entered with a large handful of papers.
Dr. Goebel's speech, in its entirety.
Ferdehoff put the sheets down on the desk.
You must read it. Quite good. One of his best.
Lighting another Simon Arzt No. 70 cigarette, Rice began to read Dr. Goebel's speech.